We're on page 5 of your notes. This is an outstanding example of some application that Abraham made. Hit him out of the clear blue like a bolt of lightning. No way he expected this one to come down on him. The command to offer up Isaac. And Abraham followed through with it. And it's, again, back to what I said. I hope you're all listening. Some people in the past, a bunch of them didn't listen. You do not put family above God. You don't know what can come to any of us. I didn't know way back in the day when I had this Baptist preacher introduce me to Bob theme tapes. And I started listening while he went and ran some errand. And I went, that's what I've been praying for. That's it. And so they'd send you tapes, reel-to-reel tapes back then. That's even before cassettes. Reel-to-reel tapes and booklets. I couldn't absorb enough of it fast enough. And I'd been in the ministry for a while and went through Bible school practically. And I knew that's where I was headed. But then I had to think, what's Brenda going to do? I mean, she's been raised up from knee high in a Baptist church, and is she gonna go for this? She didn't miss a beat. She didn't say you're crazy. Nothing like that. She might have said it later in life, but she didn't say it then. She didn't say it about that. Not about that. Didn't miss a beat. So I never had that test. But I have had family test. And I just made up my mind that doctrine's coming first. I'm following God, so help me God. I'm gonna follow God and His plan to the end. If people fall around me right and left, I'll see them in the afterlife. If they want to go that way, they can go that way. But how many people around here over the years put kids, spouse, and desire for friends on the outside? Some people applied the doctrine of separation when people peeled off that they were close to, like say a sister or whatever. But then they caved into it. I mean, we get attacked as having this bad doctrine of separation. We don't care about people. Really? I care about people or I wouldn't be here. I care about those who are here and are positive at any given time. And that's who I minister to. That's who I teach. And I have no control over people's volition. I don't want any control over their volition. It's their volition to stay the course, to stay hang in there, and everything will work out. So it was this test that God said, I'm gonna take an oath in your behalf. I'm gonna bless you, and this is not just in his lifetime. Abraham ended up his life wealthy. Okay, fine. A lot of wealthy guys out there. He ended up, but it was divine wealth, divine blessing. It's a difference. And so they got to enjoy Isaac until Abraham passed and went into phase 3, paradise beneath. And it actually took on his name. And there was all those people that went before him that were in there. It actually got his name, that place before we go straight to the third heaven. It was called Abraham's bosom. Abraham's the pattern for all time, for the three adjustments to God. Yes, there's equally great believers otherwise. But Abraham happened to be at the right place, at the right time, and had the right disposition as a believer. And he is the founder, the human founder, under God, of the Jewish race. And every time another Jew is born into the world, he's got another descendant. And then, because his descendants fall into the following category. Racial. Racial only means you're a Jew, but you never became a believer. Well, then you are rejected completely. Your race doesn't save you. Racial, and then there's racial regenerate. Racially a Jew and regenerate. Born again. And depending on the dispensation you're in, if you're in the church age and you're a Jewish believer, like Jesus' original disciples and later apostles, they are racial regenerate royal family. The Jews of the previous dispensation, from Abraham on down the line, who became believers, they're racial regenerate. The Jews in Israel today, a lot of them, they're just racial religious, but not the right religion. That's going to change. A big change is coming after the rapture. And the Jewish people in Israel and around the world, they're still out there in captivity. They're going to be polarized. Father against son, son against father. Just like Jesus said. Because some are going to believe and some aren't. It's the old story. And those who are unbelievers, they'll be cast out and dealt with like Gentile unbelievers. They'll wind up in hell. So this covenant and this oath guarantees that the Jewish race is going to survive. Blessing by association with Abraham. Through the centuries, they're going to survive. And that land promise is going to be validated. They're back now, holding a portion of it, and doing pretty good for a tiny nation physically. I mean, they're pretty prominent. There's a lot of small nations that aren't anywhere close to being as prominent as they are. But that's the flesh on the bones and the skin, the protective skin. They got a lot more to go through before they get to the kingdom. A lot more to go through. And the threats against them are going to be very great. But God will pull every string necessary to preserve them from the threats and the attacks that will come against them in the tribulation period. In the book of Daniel, it says, in those days, the archangel Michael, who is the guardian angel. So yeah, each of us have a guardian angel. So behave yourself around him, okay? He doesn't want to see you all involved in all unrighteous activity. Of course, they've seen it all. The guardian angel of Israel is Michael. And in those days, Michael will rise up. And that'll be like a defensive weapon for him. So if anybody, Iran, whoever, wants to launch nuclear weapons their way, he'll swat them out of the sky. He'll swat them out of the sky. So that they'll be defended. They do a lot to defend themselves, but we're talking about the Gentile nations rising up against them. And what God will do to protect and preserve Israel. Now, Israel, through the centuries, obviously have had some real downs. Failed miserably in the land. Got kicked out of the land. But the land still, for the racial regenerate Jews of the age of Israel and beyond. There'll be a bunch more added in the millennium. And then we just got the eternal state. So this language of like the stars of heaven and the dust of the earth or the sand on the seashore, that's not possible. Do you know how much sand there is on one beach? How many grains on just one little beach next to the ocean? Well, we'll see, won't we? But we're dealing with this end of it. And so God took an oath. And he's in the land. And he says, I'll give all these lands to your descendants. And so Israel acquired territory there with the initial conquest under Joshua. Oh, by the way, God took one other oath. I don't know how many oaths he's taken, but he took another oath too. It was against the Exodus generation. I swear by myself that not one of you will enter the land alive, except the two guys out of the whole Exodus generation of believers. Only two qualified to go into the land. Many of them were young enough to have survived the period. And that was Joshua and Caleb. Out of hundreds of thousands of males of their age or older or whatever, they're the only two. So don't worry about being in a minority. Minorities exist in the Bible. The few. Just be sure you're one of them. He's... people out here trying to build big churches. Oh, we got this program. We got this, all that mess. It doesn't do anybody, it's just entertainment. It's not my kind anyway. I got my own entertainment. All right. Because the Abrahamic covenant, up to this point, it took the Isaac event, it took this event to lock it in. Lock it in. Because you've done this. He didn't say, as long as your descendants behave themselves. They didn't do that a lot of the time. The majority did not behave themselves. The day of Elijah. Elijah's discouraged. Because it doesn't seem like there's anybody. And God gave him a statistic. He said, Elijah, there are 8,000 people that have not bowed the knee to Baal. 8,000. And I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of Jews population-wise existed in the day of Elijah. He says, there's 8,000 scattered around out through here that haven't bowed down before Baal. That was to encourage him. Because he felt like I'm alone and there's nobody to speak of. It's not true, Elijah. There's 8,000 scattered throughout Israel that have not practiced idolatry and bowed to a fake god. Okay. The installments of the Abrahamic covenant. The first installment was 1876 B.C., when Abraham was 70 years of age, minding his own business, being positive, living in a lukewarm family of believers and who understood a Messiah was coming. His father understood that he was in the line of Christ. He had to have. But they were just fat and happy and I'm going to be here and this is okay. And dabble over here in idolatry. I got documentation for that. The gods your fathers followed back in the day. Gave credence to. It's like you're trying to do both of them. God over here and this over here. And that was in this first installment. He was 70 as I told you. And the first communique from Yahweh. Go forth from your country. And from your relatives, well, that'd kill most people immediately. And from your father's house to the land which I will show you. I'm keeping that a secret right now. I'll show it to you. And I'll make you a great nation. I'll bless you and make your name great. And so you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those that bless you, and I'll curse those that curse you. Well, there's some people in this country and in this world that are up for some big cursing. Because they're bad-mouthing Israel and the whole scene over there. Those that are pushing for a Palestinian state. The Jewish ambassador in the United States to Israel says that Israel needs to give up Samaria, Jerusalem, etc. to the Arabs. to Ishmael. Whoa. I've noticed historically, I'm not promoting a political party. But I've noticed historically, the Republicans tend to be more favorable towards Israel. With some, you know. And the Democrats, pro-Palestinian. Of course, America, you know how we are. We throw money at all these other countries. We throw money at the Palestinians. We just did, we don't have any to throw, but we do it anyway. We're in debt up to our, beyond our eyeballs. We're at the bottom of the lake. We're in debt trillions. So we're sending money to these other countries. What? Well, so I help their education system. What? I can see humanitarian aid in a crisis. A country is benevolent towards another country that's just had a big earthquake or something. I can see that. But all this foreign aid that's poured out of this country into these nations, and it's made them so much better, hasn't it? No, it hasn't. It's like dumping welfare check into the pocket of an able-bodied person that can get out here and get a job. But they're going to get their check. And for every baby I have out of wedlock, I'll get another check. Who does this? We do. We do. War on poverty. President Lyndon Johnson, who tricked us into Nam. Guess what? It wasn't a war on poverty. It was a war that increased poverty. It destroyed the inner cities where they were prospering. You go look at some of the pictures of Detroit back in the day. It was one of the most desirable places to live in the United States. It's a pit now. It is a pit. So all this stuff that's been going on, put our factories in another country. Take jobs away from Americans. All this was planned. All this was planned. It wasn't some accident that dummies fell into to make us a welfare system. But anyway, those that could keep bad mouthing and all this stuff, that's just Jewish tradition. They don't have sovereign eternal right to that land. Uh-huh. We're going to see. He took an oath by Abraham, and he's going to uphold it, and the nations are going to learn it, and they're going to get a lesson, and it's going to be the hard way. And Israel will be the leading nation in the millennium. And the other two and three, are Egypt and Assyria. There's no Assyria today. There is a pathetic Egypt. I mean, economically and social, because they've become a base nation, it says in the Old Testament. They weren't back in Moses' day, but. So what about Assyrians? There are some surviving Assyrians. You know those people that Jonah evangelized? Their empire rose and fell. One of the great empires of antiquity. There's some Assyrians in Iraq. They were the food tasters for Saddam Hussein. See if there was any poison in it. And, nominally, if not actually, they were Christians. Not Muslims, not one of the others. They were Christians. They identified themselves as Christians, or do. So they're surviving Assyrians who have survived through time. You never hear them mentioned because they're such a small group. So the land mandate is going to be established in the millennium over the dead bodies of millions of Gentiles. Tens of millions. They're going to make one final attempt to overthrow this whole thing. And guess who gets to crush them? Our Lord. He's going to do it single-handedly. The one who, humble and meek Jesus, he's going to do it. It's going to be a bloodbath. like's never occurred in one spot with infantry. When I assemble all the nations against Jerusalem in the day of my wrath, they should have stayed home. But people typically aren't smart. No matter when they're negative, when they see that it's all falling apart, they just keep pushing. Isn't that what you see? No amount of evidence, no amount of information to the contrary changes negative volition. Miracles, the signs in the wilderness, the signs Jesus did in miracles, did it change him? The Jewish leadership, oh, we were wrong. Let's swallow hard and, yeah, he's our Messiah. They knew he was the Messiah, but they wouldn't believe in him. They knew it. They knew he was the real deal. Because if he'd have been a fake Messiah, they could have disproved it in a minute. Now, you don't have the right birth credentials, blah, blah, blah. Because the ancient prophet, Micah, said he would be born in the little village of Bethlehem. Just like it's recorded in the book of Micah. And seen in two of our Gospels, Matthew and Luke. How could you guess that? How would you guess if you picked all the cities and towns and everything in Israel, which one would you have the Messiah be born? Oh, of course, Jerusalem. No, it's a little village just south of Jerusalem, where there probably wasn't 100 people in a place. I don't know. But it was real small, a spot on the road. Out of small things come great things. The first installment, well, that was that one. And then the second installment will be discussed Tuesday night, God willing. Let's get in where we need to get for our observance of the Lord's table.